Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church, and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about questioning systemic racism.
So over the course of the past few months, we've tried to tackle pretty intentionally on this podcast some various topics surrounding race. We've done a number of episodes on that general topic. We did some summaries of some books we had read. We had our friend Kevin Estep joined us to guest host a few episodes.
Those podcasts are really helpful to me, by the way, Kevin on there. And that was
I heard from a lot of people in our city who appreciated just the dialogue that we were trying to tee up on those podcasts. And obviously what we're trying to do is that we see part of our role in that as, hey, white Christians need to be honest about having some conversations. Let's try to just be straightforward about that and put some things on the table for us to talk about. Let's try to move forward a conversation about these issues in the church, especially. And so we wanted to do that intentionally. In one of those podcasts, we tackled the book, Critical Race Theory, the sort of reader on that topic, and summarize some of its arguments. And what we want to do in this, so here's what, as I sort of give you a flyover of how I try to think as one who helps to shape this podcast, I'm always thinking about what are things Christians need to be thinking intelligently about right now. And so obviously this summer, issues of race were on the horizon, and everybody, we needed to think well about those things, and that continues to be true. But I've also noticed in the last 12 weeks, the ground has kind of shifted underneath us. So I would say it this way. 8 to 12 weeks ago, I felt like, man, we really need to get some conversations moving forward about the topic of race. And we need to get white Christians especially okay with ideas like structural injustice. And we need to do some work here to open up these conversations and make them okay. What's happened in our culture in the last couple of months is some things have shifted to where I feel a different need now. I feel a need to sort of revisit this conversation and bring even some greater clarity. And I was helped recently by an article posted at the Public Discourse by Matthew Frank, who is a lecturer at Princeton University. So this is no slouch intellectually. He is a conservative intellectual and thinker. And the article essentially is questioning systemic racism, or the idea of systemic racism. He sets up the article this way: racism is still a very real thing, and we all have a stake in its eradication. But is systemic racism a real thing in the United States? Which I thought was an important question. I think he's trying to do some work here to say, hey, let's have a conversation about this topic. And what it made me realize is that language is important here, and we need to define our terms. So I went back to George Yancey's book, Beyond Racial Gridlock, which I thought was the most helpful book. We titled the podcast, The Book We Should All Be Reading on Racism, because I felt like, man, George Yancey has done really, really important work here. The word that Yancey uses is the word structural racism, because he's trying to embrace, there are two definitions of racism, if you remember. He said there's an individual definition which says you're a racist if you have a personally biased view toward a person of another race, and you personally and intentionally act with malice toward someone based on their race. That's an individualist view of racism. And then he has what he calls a structuralist view of racism, which says race concerns can be baked into the social structures around us. So the example we used with Kevin Estep as we talked through that podcast was the example of like housing or education, the ways that these things that we can create systems and structures in society that disadvantage people based on race. And there doesn't have to be an individual with an intentional racist, there doesn't have to be an individual acting with racist intent for the system still to work out in a racially disadvantageous way. So that I felt like is non-controversial and absolutely should be embraced by all of us who care about this. But it's interesting to me that Yancey uses the phrase structural racism. And what Matthew Frank is trying to bring to the table in this article is to say, all of a sudden, our culture seems to be talking about systemic racism. And he sees this as a problem. He says, I think the assertion that there is such a thing as systemic racism is an assertion that needs to be challenged. What's interesting about this article is that he originally wrote it for Newsweek. Newsweek posted it on their website for 2 hours and then took it down because they got some heat on social media for it. And so Matthew Frank, and then they offered to post it again a week later with like a counter rebuttal from someone who disagreed with him. And he said, "Hey, I'm fine with being disagreed with, but how about you just leave my article up there and let it be talked about? I'm trying to raise a question here." And so he took it over to the public discourse where he felt like Newsweek's editors weren't acting with straightforward intent there. And so that bothered him. But the question he's asking, I think, is an important one. And in the article, he makes a distinction between the word systematic and systemic. And I think this is one of those places where, as Christians who care about these things, we actually need to care about the words we're using and defining them well. Here's the distinction that Matthew Frank makes between systematic and systemic. He's borrowing from Brian Garner's work, Garner's Modern English Usage. Something systematic has been carried out according to an organized plan or represents a habitual, deliberate pattern of behavior. American chattel slavery was systematic racism. So was Jim Crow, right? So these are systematic, intentional, organized approaches to racial bias. He says, by contrast, a thing is systemic if it affects or is a feature of an entire system. Notice that no personal agency is required, or indeed is any part of a systemic phenomenon. The question who's to blame is never answered with any particularity, for the answer is everyone. So he's saying he would agree that there is such a thing as systematic racism. He's questioning whether there is such a thing as systemic racism, and here's the point he's making. And I think this is a conversation Christians need to be having within the church. And I just want to put this forward as part of the thing that needs to be in our dialogue. And I'm concerned about this article because I think Newsweek's choice to take this down suggests that as a culture, we're not ready to have a fair argument about the terms we're using here and to let this be a real live conversation in our culture. What I think you're seeing, and in some sense, it's good. Right. It's sort of good that our culture is actually trying to reckon more honestly with racism. And I think that's good. But I think we see a pendulum swing to where all of a sudden there's almost an assumption that racism is systemic and that it's everywhere. And Matthew Frank wants to say, hey, I have a problem with that assumption. And here's why. Because if we can't point to what's the systematic system that needs to be reformed. And we can just say, well, systemic racism is everywhere, then it absolves anyone from having to take responsibility for anything. And it sort of condemns everyone that's a part of that system. Here's why I think this is a really important issue for Christians. If you think about what happened in LA last week, where the two police officers were ambushed in their car and shot, and I don't know the motives of the shooter, and that whole thing is still getting adjudicated. But I think that kind of thing is a byproduct of where this conversation has gone wrong, because if systemically law enforcement is a racist institution, then it doesn't matter who the people are, what their motives are, whether they're good cops, bad cops, or in between. They are part of a system that needs to be torn down. And that's the movement that I see in the culture right now is this sort of blanketly systemic approach to saying sports is racist, the police are racist, government is racist, education is racist, universities are racist. That just any system is now sort of it's sort of the movement is to overthrow or to dismantle the entire system. Because there's some inherent racism that inheres in the system. And I think Matthew Frank is trying to ask the question and to draw out the concern. Hey, let's not just say a system is racist. Let's point to what are the systemic places where racism has been systematized, if it has. So, for instance, in universities that have traditionally perhaps excluded certain kinds of people, okay, that's a systemic or a systematic approach that needs to be dealt with and that needs to be remedied. That's different than saying the entire system itself is flawed. And I think this is a conversation that needs to be had and that right now isn't being had. And I'm concerned about the way that in the last 3 months or so, the cultural narrative in the United States has sort of turned to a wholesale embrace of the idea of systemic racism without any careful dialogue about what do we mean by that and to what extent is it part of the system, and what, if it's there, how do we remedy it and resolve it other than just overthrowing something and tearing something down? And so I think this is very, very important. So here, let me read a few quotes from the article that, again, this is Matthew Frank trying to critique the idea of systemic racism and say, can I raise my hand and ask whether this is really a thing? He points out that Robin DiAngelo, in her book White Fragility, which, by the way, has all of a sudden become like apparently the Bible on this topic. But the problem with the book is that its thesis is sort of unverifiable and unfalsifiable. It's just stated. She quotes, I'm going to say this person's name wrong, Omawale Akintunde, in 1999 with this definition. Racism is a systemic, societal, institutional, omnipresent, and epistemologically embedded phenomenon that pervades every vestige of our reality. Matthew Frank is saying, if that's the definition of racism we're using, yeah, how could we ever say that anything is not racist? Because what you just said is it's systemic, societal, institutional, omnipresent, and epistemologically embedded, and it pervades every vestige of our reality. I think that is a really, really strong and wide-ranging definition of racism that deserves to be debated, deserves to be saying, well, okay, is that true? What he's saying is Robin DiAngelo has just assumed that that's true in this book, and that's sort of the narrative that's being taken forward in the culture right now, and there's some problems with that. The problem is presumed to just be everywhere and to be affecting every vestige of our society. Here's another quote from Matthew Frank's article. Since systemic racism theory takes no interest in fixing particular blame, it moves in one step from observable differences in outcomes across racial groups to saying that a system of white supremacy is to blame. He's making a very important point there that I want to draw out that I think is part of what I have concerns about. Notice he says, it moves in one step from observable differences in outcomes to saying a system of white supremacy is to blame. That is, in fact, what I see happening in the cultural dialogue that we're caught up in right now. We observe differences in outcomes. We would say, well, there are disparities in, for instance, the attainment educationally or socioeconomically of certain culture groups over against others. And we move from that demographic fact to saying a system of white supremacy is to blame for that. That's happening all across our culture right now. And that's concerning to me because I think we need to step back and ask, well, what are the other factors in play there? To move from one step, there's an observable difference here, to here's the reason why it exists, is not a good research strategy, nor is it a good policy strategy. Right? We need to ask. There's a bunch of other steps that need to be taken in the midst of that sort of question to say, okay, if this difference exists, what are the reasons that lie underneath that, and what could be the possible sources of that disparity, and then how should we remedy those sources? What Frank points out is what's being said right now is those differences are a result of white supremacy, and therefore we need to dismantle the system of white supremacy. No one, as far as I can tell, is giving a very clear picture of what would it mean to dismantle that system. So far, what it means is, as we talked about a number of episodes ago, sort of tearing down the power structures that seem to be led by white people. That may or may not be a solution, but that's not on the table for debate. And so I think Matthew Frank's point that we're moving in one step from observable differences in outcomes to saying that a system of white supremacy lies underneath that is a problem. And I think this is a place where Christians need to lead the way with a little more nuance and a little more willingness to have some debate and discussion about, okay, in what structures in our society do we see different racial outcomes at play? How should we address those? What are ways we can tackle those? How should the church be involved there? And I have concerns that some of what Matthew Frank is pointing out in this article really does need to be talked about. And that Newsweek's sort of decision to not have him post this article is a certain kind of cancellation that seems to be happening pretty frequently in our culture right now, where it's like, if you question at all the assertion of systemic racism, that's taboo right now. You can't question that assumption. And I think wise and thoughtful people need to be willing to question assumptions and say, hey, let's have some deeper conversation here about what's really happening. What are the reasons for it? How do we solve it?
Seems to me, if you adopt what he describes as systemic racism, that mindset, the quote that you had of something that's systemic, societal, institutional, omnipresent, epistemologically embedded, that there's no escape from that.
Right.
Like that there's no way to actually address the wrong. There's no way to actually move towards justice other than just allowing aggrieved, those with a grievance, and I say this fully and completely acknowledging that structural racism still exists in ways in our society, but if this is the description, then all this becomes is I'm aggrieved, give me what I want. Like the possibility of manipulation here just becomes endless, and it's a vortex that you never escape. And so it seems to me this is just leads to nothing but societal despair, manipulation, and fracturing rather than trying to achieve a more just society.
Yes. Frank points out the solution to systemic racism is this: the system, a college or a profession or the nation as a whole, is said to be suffused with racism. The fault for systemic racism is no one's in particular and everyone's in general. So the problem with this is, if the system is the problem, then that's everybody who's a part of that system is to blame in some way, which is, I think, what you see with how some people are approaching law enforcement now and really what's happening on a lot of university campuses. There are a lot of university campuses that, like, their blanket approach right now is, you know, diversity training for all the faculty, and in some cases that's good, but in some cases that amounts to you apologizing for being white and like making statements of like your historic oppression of people in ways that are sort of what's the word I'm looking for here? Compulsory, mm-hmm. Right? Like you don't have it's actually not, hey, would you come to personal conviction about ways you might need to own your responsibility here? Just, oh, you're a white person? Well, then you need to write this statement of, right? You need to give this right answer on the exam in order to pass this diversity training. And there's a lot of faculty that are starting to raise their hands and going, this doesn't seem like a healthy approach to how to actually resolve historic injustices and remedy current inequalities.
I really appreciate his press on the concrete. I do, however, have a question and could see why people may push back. I disagree with Newsweek pulling this down. I think this is a great conversation starter. But at times, it feels as if he more hat tips wherever maybe some structural racism still exists rather than validating it or giving the weight to arguments that have been made and maybe even some of the more nuanced and subtle ways that this still exists. It kind of felt like everybody's just talking in very general, nebulous, non-concrete ways. I know I might be painting with too broad a brush, but sometimes it felt like the article was like, hey, no one can really define this. And so this is just kind of a conspiracy theory-esque mindset. And so let's back this train up kind of far, where I would have appreciated a little bit more engagement with some of the more concrete examples or subtle examples. I could see why there would be a lot of pushback to this article and saying, hey, this could really give license to dismissing some things in our society.
Well, and that's why I feel like the distinction between structural racism and systemic racism is an important distinction. Yeah. Clearly, Matthew Frank has a very limited purpose in this article, which is to press on the use of the term systemic racism. He's just trying to say that term, right, doesn't make any sense and it's meaningless, so let's stop using it. Now, you may agree or disagree with that assertion, but that's why I think Yancey's language of structural racism is more helpful language, because I think what Yancey would say is, let's take something like redlining, for instance. Okay, there was a structure in place that disadvantaged African-American people when it came to housing for decades in American life. That needs to be now that's been identified. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's been partially remedied. There may be other things that need to be dealt with to fully remedy it. But at least we can say, okay, that was a structural instance of racism. That's different than saying the banking system is inherently racist, right? Like now we have, well, how do we solve that problem?
Yeah, that's
good. I don't know, other than by tearing down that system and building a different one, right? And that's where I think there's a difference between, it seems like, I would say it this way, it seems like structural racism is a category that allows for reform. It seems like systemic racism is a category that only allows for revolution.
Yeah.
And that's why I think some elements of our society really like the category of systemic racism, because it just says, well, let's tear down the system.
Yeah. And it's an open door for completely different sort of political philosophy, philosophy of, you know, family, of human nature. I mean, just so let's just go down the list of what sort of hitches its to this cart philosophically and policy wise. So I appreciate this, the way you're sort of connecting Yancey and this article. And so in a sense, these supplement each other well of, hey, let's press on this systemic language, but let's replace it with something more precise and more helpful and more workable. And that's what Yancey offers.
The interesting thing about your bank analogy, even, Bob, is that if something were rebuilt, somebody would be doing that and those people would be accountable.
Right.
Right. And so I like the fact that he's raising this question. It's definitely in the weeds. But I think what also is great about this, him just asking this question, is that it makes you go back to the white fragility argument. And those are things that we've just accepted, right? A lot of, or
it
I
seems
should
like
say,
right now,
lot,
yeah.
Yeah. Right now, if you don't accept white fragility, then right. You're racist.
Right. Exactly.
But if you actually read that particular definition, you go, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yes. And this is where I'm just suggesting, I think there's the church's job here is to say, hey, we need to have more conversation. We need to define our terms more carefully. We need to move toward a more constructive dialogue here rather than just saying, let's embrace this idea of systemic racism and start tearing everything down. Matthew Frank in the article uses the example of law enforcement. He says, are there racist cops? Clearly the answer is yes. How should we deal with that and approach that? Well, there could be multiple solutions proposed for how do we figure out where racism is being expressed in law enforcement and how do we deal with that? But he's saying if the system is to blame, right? If all cops are presumed to be part of a racist system, now we have no way of actually rooting out the bad actors. Mm-hmm. And we're just, you just see people pushing to tear down the entire system of law enforcement. Well, that's going to get us to anarchy, right? Like, I don't think anybody feels like that's actually a viable solution, but that's what you see a lot of energy going toward right now. And I think he's trying to say, hey, that, if we just presume that cops are racist because law enforcement is a racist system, that doesn't seem like it gets us very far toward any kind of meaningful solution. And probably, I think Matthew Frank, you get the sense in this article that he's maybe implicitly saying, and that's probably okay with certain elements of our society. And that's part of the problem, mm-hmm. is that there are people who would actively like to foment some kind of discord and disharmony because it might advance certain objectives in the world. And that might not be a good thing. All right. So this is one of those podcasts where I hope what we've done is one, to continue to push forward a conversation about race, but two, to be clear about the importance of the terms that we're using and defining them well and asking the question when you hear an assertion saying, okay, is that true? How would that be verified? Is that demonstrable? How could we get a handle on that problem, solve that problem, decide whether that assertion is true? And I think we also need the thing that's interesting to me about this Matthew Frank article. It needs to be okay for someone to raise their hand and say, I'm not sure systemic racism is a real thing. If that's not okay in our society for someone to do that, I think we've lost intellectual freedom. And so you might disagree with that. You might say, hey, I want to push back and say that it is a real thing. But either way, that conversation should be okay. And I'm a little concerned right now that our culture is in a place where some of those conversations are not okay to be had. and where I don't think that's a healthy place for us to be and for the church to be. So let's be the kind of people, the kind of Christians, the kind of citizens who care about having these kinds of conversations, who are not threatened by questions being asked that seem uncomfortable, and that wherever we find ourselves in this dialogue about race and racial justice in America, that we're open to being persuaded and open to healthy conversation and pushback and give and take. These kinds of arguments are important if we're ever going to move forward. And as Christians, we need to care deeply about the words that are being used, and more importantly, about the truths that are being asserted.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from our listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.